Okay, what we've said so far, that the rationalization of mitzvot is that it's a very dangerous operation, because if you start classifying the mitzvot under these two categories, then all sorts of repercussions, you know, you don't understand, you do understand, it makes sense, it doesn't make sense. Can we assume that we can make sense out of the mitzvot sichliot, like some of the Rishonim held, and then can we therefore judge them by our moral standards? On the other hand, if we treat them as chukim, and we jump in because we obey them, whether we understand them or not, we're more committed. It's a strong, firm commitment. But on the other hand, we don't understand what we're doing. So maybe we're not as motivated as we can. I would like to call your attention to the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan claims, and you'll see it on the bottom of page 2, that Kibud Av V'Em should be listed and categorized as a mitzvah sichlis. He wants to derive a conclusion from that. It's not just theoretical. The fact that it's a mitzvah which is common and universally accepted amongst all nations indicates that we shouldn't make a bracha on this mitzvah. He's willing to drop a bracha on Kibud Av V'Em for this very reason, claiming that we can only make a bracha, asher kitshonu mitzvosav, to declare and acknowledge God as the one who sanctified our people with a special sanctity, only if we're doing a mitzvah which expresses our unique behavior, our unique sanctity. But if that mitzvah is commonplace and it's popularized and it's universalized, then how can we recite the bracha, asher kitshonu mitzvosav v'tzivonu? Now, it's true that Kibud Av V'Em, to some extent, is a rational, universal mitzvah, and it touches on a very fundamental moral principle of gratitude, etc., etc. However, I should point out that the Rambam, when he speaks about the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, and this you'll see on page 4, sort of in the middle of the page, the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim says, Ad heichan hu Kibud Av V'Em? How far does this mitzvah take us? And he says, "Afilu nitolo notlu kis shel zehuvim shelo, v'shlicho befanav liyam lo yachlimem v'lo yitzar b'fneim v'lo yichos kenegdim lo yikabel gzeres hakosu v'yishtok." The Rambam calls and classifies this mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em as a divine decree, and that's really similar to what the Rambam says about many of the mitzvahs. If you take a look back in Hilchos Me'ilah in the Rambam, at the end of Hilchos Me'ilah, the bottom of page 1. The Rambam says, "Dover shelo yimtzel lo tam v'lo yedo lo ila al yehi kal v'enov." If you have a mitzvah which is defined and characterized as a divine decree, you don't understand it. Nevertheless, don't treat it loosely, says the Rambam. Don't be light about it. And in a sense, Kibud Av V'Em is a requirement that goes so far beyond the general moral accepted value and norm that it doesn't surprise me one bit that the Rambam would classify Kibud Av V'Em perhaps as a mitzvah she'ein lo tam, or that I find difficulty understanding. And we spoke in many occasions about the extreme dramatic demands that this mitzvah makes upon a person. And once again, if we treat the mitzvahs from a rational perspective, what implications and what perhaps dangers do we suffer? Take a look at a very, very famous Gemara in Brachos. This you'll see on page 3. Towards the bottom, it's the famous Gemara of Chizkiyo HaMelech. The Pasuk says in Yishayo, Bayom Mahem, Chola Chizkiyo Lamus, Vayavo Elav Yishayo Ben Amotz Hanavi, Vayom Elav Koama Hashem, Tzav LeBeischa, set up your inheritance for your family. Ki Mesa Tovelo Tichya. You will die, you won't live. Mikey Mesa Tovelo Tichya. Very strange. If you'll die, certainly you won't live. Mesa Tovelo Mazevelo Tichya Olam Abba. Now we know that Chizkiyahu HaMelech was one of the great saintly kings in the history of Israel. Amale. When Chizkiyahu heard this from Yishayahu ben Amoz, he asked him, "My kuli hai, why do I deserve such a terrible punishment? Completely cut off." Amalei mishum shal asakta v'piriyah v'rivya. Chizkiyahu HaMelech did not get married, did not have children, at least at that point. Amalei. So Chizkiyahu HaMelech, to defend himself, said, "Mishum dechazoy li beruach hakodesh, it was revealed to me through some divine spirit." That there will be, this is a saginah, a way of saying that there will be Rishoyim that will come forward from my offspring. I want to avoid that. I don't want to bring evil into the world.
Amale, one of the most famous lines in Shas. Yeshayahu HaNavi turns back to Melech and he says to him, Behadi kavshi drachmona lamalach. Rashi says, kavshi drachmona sisarim da kodesh baruch hu. You think you understand what the mitzvah period of Erev is about. You think that you can decide for yourself whether it should apply to you. So you want to enter into the secrets of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You want to look into the future and see what's going to happen down the line. Says Yishayo, my demifkadisa iboy l'cholamevat. That which you are commanded to do, you have to do. U'may demicha kami dekud shbrichu li'ovid. And that which God sees fit to happen, let that happen. That's not up to you. You've gone beyond your bounds. You've exceeded beyond all the limitations and beyond the scope of the mitzvah and its chiyuvim. You have a mitzvah, you have to fulfill it. Don't come with your calculations. See, here's another example of a very dangerous situation, a repercussion of the fact that you classify the mitzvah as moral. You think you understand its implications and its goals. And you decide for yourself, based on these revelations that you have, whether that mitzvah applies to you or not. A very, very tricky business. In fact, one of the classical cases of a mitzvah sichlis, which would be a logical mitzvah, yet the Gemara seems to deny it, is the case of Shiluach HaKan. Send away the mother bird, the Torah commands, before you take the fledglings, the little birds. And yet the Mishnah says in Brachos, right there, the next source on your page, Ha'omer al-Kan Sipor Yagir Rachamecha, that your Rachmanis, your divine compassion extends to the nest of the bird, is Meshaskin also. We force him to be quiet. We silence him. The Ramban, on this Pasuk of, in Kiteitze, of Shiluach HaKan, refers to the Rambam, as he very often does. He establishes that the reason for this mitzvah, Hatam, both in the case of Shiluach HaKan and in the case of Oso Vespino, which you're not allowed to shecht a mother and a child on the same day, Ki Hatam Bishneim, both have a very clear understood underlying reason, Lebilti Hayosan Ulev Achzari Velo Nirachem, that we shouldn't be cruel without compassion. And in the next paragraph, you'll see on the top of page 4, he quotes the Rambam, who says, Ki atam shiluach haken, v'tam osav espinolo sishka t'biyom echa k'dei lahazir, shalo yishchot ha-ben b'enei ha-em. And the Rambam gives a whole philosophical insight. He says, Ki yesh la behemos da'ag o'gdola b'zeh. That the animals have a tremendous amount of fear over their offspring. The Ein Hefresh says the Rambam bein dagas ha'odom le'dagas ha'behemus al-beneim, and in this case the animal kingdom is equal to the human race. They both share that same sentiments towards their children, that same fear and concern about the welfare of their offspring. Ki avas ha'em v'chanosa miloshen chanun libnei bitna einenu nimshach achrei ha'seichel v'adibur. Although what makes the human race unique? I have many, many copies here if you need. You should have 4 pages. Thank you. What makes the human race unique as opposed to the animal kingdom is the intelligence and the power of speech, but nevertheless, a feeling for one's offspring and to worry and be concerned about one's children is not something that reflects the human mind. Or the power of speech. It's common to the entire animal race, animal kingdom. It's not human. And therefore the Torah prohibits against taking a mother and its child and being cruel to it. Or, for example, taking the birds, the little fledglings, from the nest in front of the mother. Says the Rambam, Avalhumi pu'ulas koch ha-machshava metzuyel behemos, kasheri metzuyel bi'odam. V'imkain, says the Rambam, listen to this. The Ram wants to postulate a repercussion in Afgamina from his understanding his premise. Ein ikar ha'isur ba'oso vespino, rak bibno v'oso. What sequence did he slaughter the mother and the child, or the father and the child? if he slaughtered the father first, then this isur shouldn't apply. Because again, the Rambam attributes the underlying compassion here to a parent animal for its or its offspring. But if he changes around the order, then that law and that rule doesn't apply.
Is there a
bracha? What does he mean by a kol achaka? He says that the reason why the Torah says you can't kill both in the same day, you can't slaughter both, and it doesn't matter what sequence, is a harchaka. Being the Torah itself made a kind of a siag to worry, to concern about the possibility that if we allow you to kill in this sequence, then you'll do it in the other sequence, topsy-turvy. So to make a fence around the Torah prohibited it in both directions. But again, I'm pointing out to you, Rabosai, that you see how far the Rambam was willing to go with his understanding of the rational explanation of this mitzvah. When we get back to the Mishnah itself, and the Mishnah yells and screams, "Mishasken also, silence a person who claims that this mitzvah is a result of the divine compassion." Says the Rambam, he's aware of this question. On page 4, the Omar Rav, the Al Tashiv Alai Mimamar Chachomim HaOmer Al Kan Tzipri Agir HaChemecha, etc., etc. Don't answer me with the argument that the Mishnah says we're not allowed to declare that we understand the nature of the mitzvah. Says the Rambam, Ki zu achas mishtei svaros. This is one of two opinions, and we don't accept that opinion. So in other words, the Rambam is going as far as to reject a Mishnah. But I'll tell you the truth, it's not just the Mishnah. If you take a look in the Medrash, which is here on page 4, you'll see a very famous statement in the Medrash attributed to none other than Rav. Rav was one of, if not the greatest, of all the Amoraim. In fact, according to one sugya in the Yerushalmi, I think Rav is a Tana. He can argue with the Mishnah. Rav Omer lo nitnu amitzus el tzarif ben esabrios. It's almost like he's creating a structure here. That the mitzvos are commands. You have to obey them. Do you understand them? You don't understand them. It doesn't matter whether you understand. It's totally irrelevant. God is cleansing you. He's purging you. This is an entire process of catharsis by which we fulfill the divine command. What shall I say? Moshe lema dover dom. I remember when I was in the army and they asked me to do certain things. Kainam afakeid. Kainam afakeid. Yeah. I didn't understand what he was saying. Not only that, I thought he was a total whatever. We won't go into detail. I mean, I was about 3 times his age. I mean, but anyway, that's a different thing. We used to joke around with him all the time. He was so young, this guy. And then we said to him, "What are you doing after you finish the army?" So he was on a one-way ticket to Los Angeles. When we asked him, "When are you coming back, you know, to be with us in the Holy Land?" We couldn't get much of a response. Anyway, that's a different topic. You know, maybe we'll talk about that another time. But there are some very idealistic chayalim in the army, especially if you're in a Hezder unit. I was waiting for Hatikva every day, but I was lucky at least that, you know, at the my induction at the end of my basic training, they sang Hatikva. I was really excited about that. It's the first time I saw an Israeli flag since I'd been in the army. So, you know, all my life I dreamt about this great experience of being a chayal, you know. Anyway, so the Rambam is saying basically, we can understand the mitzvahs, we can rationalize them. The Mishnah says, don't even try it. Don't go down that route. Mishaskin also. And the Gemara says in the name of Rav, the Major says in the name of Rav, is that Mitzareif Lehenes Abrios. There's no other purpose of the mitzvahs. Don't even try. Don't even bother explaining the mitzvahs. So, just to sum up everything we've said so far, you see from the Rambam in Hilchas Me'ilah that you have to be very, very careful. Once you start rationalizing the mitzvahs, it may change your motivation. You may derive your own conclusions about the mitzvahs, when they apply, when they don't. You're going to use human logic. And not only that, you may get very frustrated. Because not only is your motivation level kind of low over here, because it's based on your understanding. And that understanding, you know, may or may not, you know, push you all the way through and take you to the finish line. But moreover, who says that you're going to be satisfied with that explanation? Maybe at some point you'll reach a critical moment. You'll hit the, how do you say in English, a parshas drachim, a fork in the road, you know, some sort of major crisis in your life, and all of a sudden you'll say, no, that mitzvah makes no sense, and who knows where that could impact on you. So from the start, we have to say that there's a danger over here. On the other hand, you know, let's not forget what we started with. You know, Zoch Schukas HaTorah, the fact that the nations of the world and the Satan and the Yetzirah are taunting us. You know, could this be a divine command? You don't understand it. The rational mind begs, craves for some explanation that would satisfy its intellectual need to put the mitzvah into some perspective. And who is the founder, if you will, the breakthrough, the great giant and the pioneer in this area of rationalizing mitzvahs? None other than the Rambam himself. Then we're, you know, those who give explanations for mitzvahs are really standing on the shoulders of a giant. In fact, the Rambam has impacted the minds of the Jewish nation for 1,000 years. I mean, take for example Nivuah, prophecy. All that we know about prophecy comes from the Rambam. He dedicates not only chapters in the Mishneh Torah, but long chapters in the Mor Nevuchim. And if any of you gentlemen want to volunteer to become a prophet, highly recommend that you read those chapters. He'll give you step by step. And then Ari Kaplan will finish it off with meditations. But just start with the Rambam. For example, what do we know about Jewish philosophy in terms of creation, as opposed to, let's say, Aristotelian philosophy, the Greeks who believed in the eternity of the universe? All that we know is from the Rambam. The Rambam rejects Aristotle's arguments one by one. 22 arguments he undermines in order to reject Aristotle. And what do we know about the basic tenets of the faith? About the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. About the fact that the Torah that we have in our hands is the same Torah, complete, that was given to Moshe. That Moshe was a scribe and he wrote it. What do we know about Achdus, the oneness of God? All this comes from the Rambam. And here I say this with great trepidation, there's one area of Jewish philosophy where I think the Rambam left us hanging and has not impacted on the hearts and the souls of the Jewish people. I don't want to use the word total failure, but you said it, I didn't. He was a total failure. And that is the area of Tamei HaMitzvos. Here, the Rambam worked very hard, 25 chapters of the Mor Nevuchim, dedicated solely, single-mindedly, to one and one only goal, to explain all those mitzvahs that make no sense to us. All those mitzvahs that seem to defy human logic. And the Rambam looked and suggested and formulated explanations for all of those. And yet, the Rambam's approach has hardly made a dent. It's interesting to historians, but it doesn't edify the soul of the Jewish people. It does not elevate our religious experience. It's placid at the very best, and perhaps even worse, it could be negative. And so that even though the Rambam took upon himself this endeavor to rationalize mitzvot, it pains me to say, because I, for those of you who might know, I spend a lot of time on the Rambam, and I think the Rambam was awesome. I mean, that's not even a word. I mean, you can't even describe the Rambam. But in this particular area, just doesn't cut the mustard. It just doesn't trigger off the feelings in our hearts that we expect. There were others after the Rambam that followed in the Rambam's footsteps. Even today, in our day, you'll get echoes of the Rambam's approach. Perhaps more often in other dimensions, other deviant groups, you know, in Yiddishkeit, but even amongst Orthodox, you'll find it. Rav Hirsch, for example, wrote the entire book Chorev to try to explain the dietary laws and other mitzvahs. Rav Kook, the first chief rabbi of Palestine, tried to explain shatnez, wrote an entire thesis about shatnez and what underlies it and what's its meaning. Why can't I combine wool and flax? What difference it make? And you'll find echoes of the Rambam's endeavor, of his project, echoing through the academy halls even to this day. But if you'd ask me, why did the Rambam fail to have an impact on the Jewish soul in this very sensitive area that touches on our very faith? I think the answer is his methodology. the very methodology that he employed is unacceptable. I call it the causality methodology. The Rambam set for himself the following goal. What caused the mitzvah? What is the goal of the mitzvah? What can the mitzvah achieve, and what is it meant to achieve? Let me give a number of examples, most of which will be familiar to you, to illustrate exactly what the Rambam tried to do, and the inner, inherent problems latent within the very methodology. Now, I know it's the 3 weeks, but I don't want you to get depressed. There is an alternative methodology, which I'd like to suggest. And I think even though the alternative methodology is only in diapers, it's in fledgling stages, but I think nevertheless, it gives us great hope for this area of rationalizing mitzvah. So I don't think the endeavor has to be thrown overboard. I don't think we have to regress back to the time of Rav Sadia Gaon and come up with a categorization of mitzvot that they're either logical or illogical. We can say that there is a meaning to all mitzvot, but we have to substitute a new method of analyzing mitzvot, one that will replace the Rambam's method of the Mor Nevuchim.
The Rishonim that come after the Rambam also suggest other methodologies. I mean, this Ramban on Shiloh HaKein that was mentioned, that you mentioned, tears apart the Rambam and then offers a completely different methodology.
Good. Excellent.
Not that the search for Tamei Mitzvos is wrong.
Correct.
But that the method that his approach is wrong.
Okay, excellent.
Sefer Chinuch.
Okay.
Tamei Mitzvos Shoshim.
Sefer Chinuch, I think, is a little bit closer to the Rambam.
And yet that's sort of made it dense. That's very popular.
I don't know. I think most people learn the halachic part of the Sefer HaChinuch. I don't know how edifying the Tamei HaMitzvos or the Shrashim are in the Sefer HaChinuch.
People quote when it's convenient.
So again, my friends, we almost completely ignore the Rambam's approach. And what is our reluctance to the Rambam, to accept the Rambam? I would like to give a few examples to explain how the Rambam went about rationalizing or explaining religious norms. I call it again the method of causality, the causalistic method. What caused the mitzvah and what was our ultimate goal? The Rambam set for himself what I would call a list of motives. And he assumed that we have to plug in this mitzvah or that under this motive or that. I would summarize the motives in these categories. Number one, historical. We'll see the Rambam Shita on Karbonos. Hygienic. Psychological health. Physical well-being. Social justice. And equality. Now notice what's going on. To interpret mitzvos by explaining their goals, you are reaching out beyond the system itself. That point can't be underemphasized. The system of Torah is no longer autonomous. The answers to our questions about what the mitzvot are all about are no longer inherent in the mitzvot themselves, in the Torah itself. The Torah is no longer a self-contained system. But rather we search beyond the Torah, beyond the bounds of the Torah, for certain ideals, for certain goals, and then we have to assume that this mitzvah, that, is meant to achieve those goals. I'm going to use another word to describe the Rambam's method. Instrumentalism. The mitzvah is an instrument. It's a technique. It's a means to achieve a goal. The mitzvah no longer has inherent meaning. The meaning of the mitzvah exhausts itself to the extent that it achieves its goal, which is outside of the mitzvah itself. And here I want to give you a few examples. The dietary laws, for example. The fact that we can't eat certain animals. I'm sure everyone here in the room knows which animal I have in mind. I don't want to mention it. Especially it represents Edom, which is that this is the 3 weeks in which we're thinking about Edom a lot. And the Rambam says that for hygienic dietary reasons, we've got to avoid eating that animal. What does that do for you? Does that uplift your soul? Does that tell you anything existential about the mitzvah or the prohibition in this case? And what if a physician comes along at some time, bisman min hazmanim, and decides, hey, what, you know what, the Jews are missing a certain protein, correct, a certain particular protein that we can get only from non-kosher animals. Or what if you say that in those days they didn't know how to, you know, raise the animals, and therefore they were disease-ridden, and today the things have changed. Shabbat. The Rambam, you'll soon see in the Mor Nevuchim, is going to tell you that the purpose of Shabbat is to guarantee that 1/7 of your life you spend in rest. Because we all are overworked, and we're under pressure, and we need at least 1/7 of our life spent pressureless, in a restful state of being. Psychological health is guaranteed by Shabbat. The cause of Shabbat is social, psychological pressures. The goal of Shabbat, therefore, is psychological rest. The Karbonos, says the Rambam, and here's where he got so much flack. A concession to forms of worship, of pagan worship, that were common at the time the Torah was given. And in order to educate and rechannel the Jewish people, to elevate the Jewish lifestyle, the Torah made a concession to allow for karbanot, but do it this way and not that way. Lahotzi milibo. It's like alafuki. And those who rose up against the Rambam said, chas v'sholom karamba, to attribute all the complex laws of karbanot. If anyone here ever learnt in Brisk, I don't know, you'll spend probably more time in Kudshim, or Kudzim, depending on how you pronounce it, than any other chilek of the five chalokim of Shas, the other five chalokim. And to reduce that, my nephew in Harnof, Yona Berzon, if anyone knows him, attends a weekly shiur from the Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron, in Masechta Zvachim. After 6 years, they are almost halfway through the Masechta. These are shiurim, which, again, I don't mean to insult anyone here, but if you ever want to drop by and be totally lost for an hour, you should attend that shiur. You're going to tell me that all that complicated laws, with all the deeper, profound distinctions that Reb Chaim saw as the gateway, the entrance into the entire understanding of the Torah and its methodology, that's all a concession for the pagan religions? Are you going to tell me that B'mos HaMashiach, there are no karbanos because we no longer have to concede anything to the pagans? And in the case of shofar, I don't know if you've ever read the 10 reasons for shofar offered by Rav Sajid Gaon, some of the old Machzorim, I think the Birnbaum Machzor might have it, I'm not sure which one. Which one? The Art Scroll has it?
So.
You know, he's got things like, oh, you know, when the Torah was given, there were certain nomadic tribes that used to call together the people or sound a signal of alarm by using the ram's horn. So obviously the ram's horn has to be chosen as the signal of alarm that today is the day of judgment. So if you've reduced a mitzvah like shofar to a historical phenomenon, you've connected it to something that may or may not exist today. And of course we know it doesn't. Who uses a ram? When was the last time you heard reverie, or what's it called? Did I say that right?
Yep.
Reverie, you know, blasted on a ram's horn. Try it. Maybe you could do it.
But the sirens sound like a shofar blowing.
But let me ask you a question, Mikey. If you had to choose a siren to scare someone, have you ever heard the azaka in Eretz Yisrael? Have you ever heard one? It's kind of scary. It's pretty scary. I mean, when I hear it, you know, sometimes they have tests and all this. So let me ask you, if you were creating an alarm system today, once a year for Rosh Hashanah for the Jews, would you choose the ram's horn? I wouldn't. I can give you a whole bunch of other possibilities. The first one would be the one that I heard during the Gulf War every other day, five times a day, or the one that you hear today, Chas Shalom, if there's a terrorist attack. But every country and every society has its own way of alarming, of signaling the alarm. So to say a priori that what caused the mitzvah of shofar was the nomadic tribe's use of the ram's horn, I don't know. If it edifies you, if it elevates you, if it produces a chord of religious experience for you, take it. It doesn't do much for me. The concept of causality with regard to mitzvot basically introduces the existence of alien factors. Your alarm went off, I see. Just talking about it, your alarm. And these alien factors are outside the system. They may or may not be correct. Come up with all sociological surveys, you know. So today you decide this is healthy and tomorrow you might decide it's not healthy. I don't know if you gentlemen are old enough to realize that diets have gone in and out like miniskirts or a hoop or yo-yos. Or restaurants in Israel. I don't know how restaurants do here in Toronto, but in Israel, you know, a restaurant, if it lasts for more than a year, it's a big deal, you know. And go figure out which diet you want to go on. You know, between Weight Watchers and Atkins and something crazy called South Beach. I mean, you could mamish go nuts. And every 2 days, they change the idea of how to achieve gastronomical health. It's crazy. You are adding elements outside the Torah. Extraneous goals. I want you to take a look at the Rambam in the Morning of Vuchim regarding Shabbos. The Rambam is on page 2. Do you see where he writes? Omnam inyan haShabbos time over for some. The Rambam says, I'm not even being mechadish anything. Everybody knows exactly why there's Shabbos. And he says, and I bolded it, I don't care if you're the top CEO of the company or even if you're just a regular guy. Your life is full of Omel v'Torah. Yeah, I can definitely see the Rambam's point. Could you imagine 7 days a week? Non-stop of stocks and bonds and employers and employees and faxes and cell phones and iPods and messages and who knows what. You would just go nuts. It would be an unredeemed existence. Completely dry of any sort of spiritual moisture. But to say that that's what Shabbos is all about? To tell me that God could have created a better system? Maybe we should be resting 2 hours every day. Maybe we should be resting on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Maybe on Sundays. Scratch that. So I don't know. But Rabosai, I'm going to tell you something now that's very scary. And you're going to tell me I'm crazy. There are two Rambams. There's the Rambam of the Morning of Vuchim and there's the Rambam of the Mishneh Torah. Now the history of it, exactly when was written, for what audience, I will leave to those who are more academic than I am. In fact, history was not one of my strong disciplines. Not even in high school, let alone college. So we'll leave that for York and U of T and all the Judaica programs, but I'll tell you this. There is no issue more prominent in clarifying that there are two Rambams, the Rambam of the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam of Ruchim, than this issue of rationalizing the mitzvot. I get the feeling that the Rambam himself rejected the Shita of the Morning of Vuchim. And the key of keys here is to look for the following phrase. Do a word search in Bar Ilan for Gzeiras HaKosov. We mentioned it before with regard to Kibbut Avim. Remember it? Take a look at the Rambam Hilchos Teshuva. This is on page 2. One of the most famous Rambams, you all know it by heart. Afal Pishet Kiyas Shofar Barosh Hashanah Gzeiras HaKosov. What is the Rambam saying? Off the bat, from the get-go, the Rambam establishes the ambiance. You want to know why the Torah expects you and demands of you to blow a ram's horn on Rosh Hashanah, a tkiyah shvarim, tkiyah trua, gzeiras hakosav. Don't even bother dreaming about coming up with an explanation. Forget about Rav Sadia Gaon's alarm signal and nomad lands and all the nomadic tribes and all that. Leave it out. It's gzeiras hakosav. Is that where it ends though? Says the Rambam. And now he takes a whole nother path. Remez Yeshbo. Emphasize the word bo. You remember that we started this discussion last week with the famous Chazal, which Rashi quotes in Parshas Chukas. V'eilecha reshus laharher achreihem. Achreihem, I think, means don't try to figure out why the Torah chose this particular method and why this instrument will reach this goal, and why this technique is better than another technique. Religion is not technique. Religion is not made up of a list of goals and telling you, prescribing for you, which are the best techniques to achieve those goals. It's gzeiras hakosav. But remez yesh bo. Bo meaning, look at the shofar. Don't go beyond the shofar. Remain within its confines. Describe the experience of the shofar. That's the new method that I think the Rambam is beginning and is going to take us through many, many generations. Says the Rambam, what is the shofar trying to tell us? What experience should we be feeling? I'm never going to be able to tell you that it's the ram's horn that does it for me. You'll come up with other methods. Maybe other techniques that are better, superior. And at the end of the day, we'll have to call it gzeiras hakosav. We can never know why the ram's horn was chosen, or any other horn. Uru yishenim mishnaschem, v'nirdomim hakitzu b'tardamaschem, v'chipsu b'maseichem, v'chizru b'tshuva, v'zichru barachem. Says the Rambam, what message is coded, C-O-A-D, like a C-O-D-E, from code, inherent in the shofar? What am I hearing in the shofar? How is it moving me? The answer is, it's shaking me up. It's waking me out of a reverie, out of a slumber. It's telling me it's about time I rectified my ways. This is the day of judgment. I'll never be able to tell you what caused this mitzvah. I'm not interested in the goals of the mitzvah. All I'm interested in is finding a remez. We've now substituted the word remez for ta'am. Those are fundamentally two different concepts or approaches. Tam means that I can tell you what the goal of the mitzvah is. Remez means I don't know what the goal of the mitzvah is. But I find deeper meaning in the experience of the mitzvah. I analyze the mitzvah, describe it, break it up into its component parts, as we'll see the Rambam is going to do over and over again, and try to see how I can experience that mitzvah. Let me call your attention to the Rambam in Hilchos Mikvos. It's the next source on your page. Davar Barur, says the Rambam. V'golui. There's no question about it. Sha'atumos v'ataros gzeiros ha'kosuvhen. V'yeno midvarm she'daitel shal odem makra'aso. Makra'aso meaning that you can understand why or how this method was chosen to achieve this goal. Varein v'chlal achukim. V'chein ha'tvilo min ha'tumos. Not only contracting tumor, but even purifying yourself by jumping into a mikvah. That too is v'chlal achukim. She'ein ha'tumah tit otzoa she'tavar b'mayim. Tumor is not something hygienic. It's not filth that attaches to its body. People might think, oh, I touched the sheretz, So I contracted some sort of contagious disease, and I got a mitzvah, is a dermatological, pathological phenomenon, I got to jump into the mikveh. No, forget all that. Ela, says the Rambam, gzeres hakosuvi. But yet, hadover toli bekavonas alif. Rambam paskins like that man, the Omar, who says that when you go into a mikveh, the mikveh doesn't purify you unless you had kavona l'shem tahar. Says the Rambam, what should a person experience when he jumps into a mikveh? What's inherent on a spiritual level in terms of my experience in the act of tefillah with kavonas halev? Says the Rambam, afal pichein remez yesh bedover. There's a remez, there's an experience that we should be feeling, we should be sensing. Kishem shamachavein libo litaher. This act of jumping into the tefillah has a symbolic meaning for us. Nothing changed in his body by jumping into the mikvah. He's not using any sort of sabon, you know, to clean himself. Kach hamachavein libo l'tayer nafsho mitumos hanefoshos shein machshovas ha'ovon videos ha'ros. Even though it expressed itself in a physical action of jumping into a physical mikvah, symbolically triggers off an experience. There's a remez in this experience. Would there be no other way of achieving this goal? We're not saying that. Do we know what the goal is? We don't know. But when we look deeper into the experience, and the Rambam hasn't even touched the surface, I don't know, how many of you here, and if you haven't, you must read a book called Waters of Eden by Rabbi Kaplan. Don't all raise your hand at once. Oh, Aryeh Kaplan, Waters of Eden. It's delicious. You got to read it. It's an amazing book. He goes through the details of tefillah and tahara and what a mikveh is and when it applies, and he compares it to tefillah's kelim. You know, you buy kelim from a guy, he compares it to tefillah's nidah, he compares it to tefillah of a ger when he's misgayer, and he shows you the underlying symbolisms of going into a mikveh. What should I feel when I go into the mikveh? What should be my experience? It's a whole other approach. It's not causalistic, but rather describing what we see. And in Shabbos, the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah drops the ball as far as rest is concerned and psychological health. Says the Rambam, "Shabbos v'avodazor kolachas mishteim shkula keneged kol sharam mitzvus haTorah v'Shabbos hi ha'os shebein hakodesh baruch hu beinenu liolam." The Shabbos creates a relationship between the Jewish people and Almighty God. And if you don't experience that relationship, then you're out of the pale. You have a klal risha Yisrael. If you do it publicly, you're like an Oved Avodah Zarah. Interesting, and I don't know how to explain this, the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, which we saw earlier, offers a second explanation, much closer to the Rambam of the Mishneh Torah. Says the Rambam, again, we read the first half, which I underlined, and then he says, im, the word im means an. Additionally, Masha Masmid Umakayim Hadas Anichbad Miod Lidoros, what the tradition of observance of the Shabbos passes on and injects into the Jewish spiritual genealogy or genetic code throughout the generations, he Amuna Bechidush Ha'olam, belief in creation. This goes back to the other Rambam that I discussed before, that the Rambam rejects Aristotle and the ancient Greeks who believed that the universe is eternal. Says the Rambam, no, there is such a thing as creation. Is there a human being on the face of the earth who can comprehend creation? Yesh me'ayin? Has any one of us ever experienced something out of nothing? Could you just begin on your, you know, Mishkavi Balela, sometimes I think and my mind starts exploding. What would it be that there was no universe and God created the universe? It's a secret, it's a mystery. But says the Rambam, somehow we're open to it. The Jewish people somehow are able to live with this belief. We don't find it foreign or alien. Says Ram, you know why? Because of the Shabbos. Somehow the Shabbos, the experience of remembering creation, of having an encounter with Almighty God on the Shabbos, in which we get a little bit of a, I don't know what to call it, a shmek, a flavor of what creation is all about. And Shabbos after Shabbos, with tremendous dedication, we avoid and we abstain from the 39 categories of labor in a very meticulous way. Somehow we encounter that mysterious experience of creation. And what penetrates into our hearts and our souls is the belief, the emunah, in Chidush HaOlam, which is so fundamental to our religion, to our belief. So yes, even the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam touches on something much more existential, much more essential, much more powerful than the experience of rest and psychological health. The Ramban, which we're not going to go through, and this is on page 4, rejects the Rambam on Karbonos very vehemently, and offers a pshat al derech ha'emes. You'll see this in the middle of page 4, at the bottom of page 4. The Ramban will see all sorts of symbolisms in Karbonos. The most profound of which, and most popular of which, is that I am meant to see myself on the Mizbeach. Nefesh achutas tomus. When I bring an animal, it's really a substitute for myself. I should be there. But there's much more than that. There's Rikas Adam, and the Ramban has a whole sheet to what Adam represents, Adamu and Nefesh. And then there's Klishores, and there's Kohanim and Kuhuna, and what the Kuhuna represents, and the various Midos, until finally the Ramban says, Al Piderech HaEmes, it's all Kabbalistic. I'm not here to, shall I say, advocate the study of Kabbalah. Some say you have to be at least 40 years old for that. I think you probably have to be twice that age. But whatever it might be, through Kabbalah we see the symbolism in the mitzvos, in the nitty-gritties, in the details. It's a whole other approach. We're no longer searching outside the system for alien elements. We're looking and describing and trying to understand the mitzvah itself and all its component parts, and how to experience the mitzvah. The Rav Zichron Levracha, many, many years ago, probably a century ago, wrote an essay which was only published in the last 20 years. It's called The Halachic Mind. I don't know if you've heard of it. Most of the book is about the philosophy of science, and the Rav tries to prove that the philosophy of science, the new philosophy of science, the new development and methodology of science, is very open to the belief in God and to religious norms and so forth and so on. It's a very difficult essay. I would not recommend it unless you have like endless amount of time and you have access to the most sophisticated dictionaries of scientific terminology. My father, Zichron Levracha, read the piece 3 times. Only on the 3rd time he began to understand it. But there is one chapter here in which I think the Rav is addressing people like us, perhaps, you know, who aren't so oriented in the philosophy of science. And I would like to read to you just a small section of this essay. He says that with regard to the approach to understand philosophically the religious act and the religious norm, he says the only method that's open, that's acceptable, because he totally rejects this idea of the enumeration of causes, of what came before and what comes after, the only method he calls retrospective, to explore the act of the mitzvah in order to excavate hidden strata underlining the religious act. The only solution to the philosophical problem regarding rationalization of the religion can be formulated in the following manner. If rationalization is guided by the how question, in other words, we identify a certain goal and then we figure out how to get there, then it is detrimental to religious thought. If, however, the purpose, the goal of rationalization is the what question, and its method is identical with descriptive reconstruction, which the Rav in the first 8 chapters of this essay describes as the modern scientific method, it's called descriptive reconstruction, then it may enrich our knowledge of the homo religioso. So the emphasis here is on the word description or reconstruction. Now let's construct the mitzvah as it's given. Of course, we cannot expect to bring this descriptive method to full perfection in the domain of religion. We will always be confronted with inconsistencies. Now, there will always be a kasha somewhere or other. Science will be more successful in this respect, for its method is relational construction and reconstruction. Notice we're not interested in some ideas, abstract ideas. Nevertheless, he says, by continuous observation, description, and analysis of the forms of the religious act, the general tendencies and trends latent in the religious consciousness may be exposed, may be grasped. Despite its shortcomings, the retrospective procedure, means description, still remains the only valid method to be pursued if we are indeed bent on understanding the religious act. Any questions? All right, I think we'll stop here.
Basically, yeah, go ahead. The only thing that's differing the Rambam from everyone else is he says there are none.
Which Rambam, by the way? Okay, the Maran Abuchim Rambam.
That we're rejecting here is the fact that he's showing us non-spiritual benefits, and we're adopting instead an approach which shows us spiritual benefits, and that's really the only difference.
Well, no, I think Chaim, you're up to the stage of you're up to stage two. I mean, you're right. But stage one, I think, before what you say is true, not so much spiritual benefits, but to find some sort of trend and identify and reveal some sort of definition or description of the religious experience. Again, you can call that spiritual if that word does it for you, and I've used that term. I'm not shying away from it. But I don't think it, you know, we're talking about spirituality in the sense that it's used today on the street. What we're talking about is finding messages that impact upon us and are inherent in the mitzvah itself. Rather than go beyond the system and say, well, these are the objective goals and these are the techniques which the Torah, the divine being, gave us to achieve those goals. Because who revealed to you the goals? How do you know those goals? They're not written in the Torah itself. So you're always involved in some sort of speculation, and you're always reducing the Torah to a means to an end. It's an instrument. It's a vehicle. It's a technique.
Doesn't the Gemara do that sometimes, though?
I don't know. I'm not sure. If the Gemara does it, then it's very much in line with the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim. And I'm not denying that the Rambam's approach in the Moreh Nevuchim is a valid approach. I'm just saying that it's basically been ignored throughout history. If I were to learn with you the 25 chapters in detail in the Moreh Nevuchim, I would bet my bottom dollar that you will not be impressed. You will be full of questions. You will be disappointed, almost let down at explaining the mitzvahs the way he does. But if you're into, let's say, lumdus, for example, so I'll give you an example. You take, for example, the parash of Achilas Poel, right? A sugya bav mitzia about what, you know, when and how and what conditions the Poel is allowed to eat in the Malacha. So you'll analyze it. You'll try one theory about how to define the mitzvah and another theory. You're always defining the halachas. And the more you learn about the halachas, you get more pieces of the puzzle and more of a shot at putting the puzzle together. And boom, if you succeed, all of a sudden you come up with a definition and all the pieces of the puzzle fit together. You found something that underlies all the halachas. But again, you didn't take that from without, but rather from analyzing the system from within. Jeff?
Is it possible to say that there's really no stira between the Mordechai Mukhi and the Mishnah Torah? Saying that it really is talking two different realms. That the Mishnah Torah is talking about, we could say, the goals and objectives of the mitzvah, what I'm supposed to do with the mitzvah. To Shabbos, what I'm supposed to do, that Shabbos is supposed to serve as a brisk and a...
But I just want to announce that if anyone has to go to Mincha, you know, I don't want you to miss Mincha. I davened already.
After Mincha?
Yeah, Mirza Hashem, we can come back. But Jeff, you davened already?
I davened already.
So let's continue.
All right.